Okay, well, good morning. I'm Tom Parker, and my pronouns are he and him. And I'd like to start off with relating something that happened 22 years ago. My niece, who was 6 years old at the time, asked me a question. She says, Uncle Tom, how come you're not married? And that kind of brought me up short, and I was trying to think what would be an age-appropriate response for a six-year-old kid. And I said finally, well, the reason I'm not married is because I don't know how to do that. And she was very helpful. She proceeded to tell me how to do it. She says, well, what you do is you find a pretty girl, and you go out on dates and stuff, and then you fall in love, and then you get married, and then you have babies. But you can't have the baby. Only girls can have babies. And I think I said something like, well, that sounds good. Maybe I'll try that one day. Knowing in the back of my mind it would probably never happen. But she's not 6 years old anymore. She's 28. And she has a master's degree in psychology. And she has a practice up in Portland, Oregon, where she has a practice in family and couples therapy. So if she were to ask me that question again, I would certainly give her a more adult response. But I don't think she will, because she knows me pretty well. I think she already knows the answer. And that brings me to the most recent chapter on my journey of self-discovery, which began earlier this year. Since 1996, I've been living in Texas, but I am increasingly spending time here in California, looking after Dad, who just turned 100 in June. Hang in there, Dad. But the church I attend in Houston is Tapestry UU. And back in February, our minister, Alicia Mills, gave a talk about what, for me anyway, were relatively new letters that have been added to LGBTQ, namely IA+. And there was a time when I would have rolled my eyes a little bit at that alphabet soup. When I was a kid, there was gay, straight, bisexual, what else is there? Well, come to find out, there's a lot else. And not only that, but just maybe one of those new letters applies to me. So what I plan to do here today is to share my journey of discovery in this area, which isn't over yet, and hopefully shed some new light on what it can mean to be part of the LGBTQIA community. Now, I just mentioned that one of those letters applies to me, so I expect you're wondering, okay, Tom, which one? The letter I is for intersex, or what they used to call hermaphrodite, which describes somebody who has sexual characteristics of both genders. That's not me. But the letter A references somebody who is asexual or aromantic, often both. And that resonated, because while I'm not entirely asexual or aromantic, I would say I am a minimalist in that regard. My needs are low, but not non-existent. But in any case, I've concluded I'm not what they nowadays call heteronormal. I'm heterosexual, but I'm not heteronormal. And the difference is that heteronormal people are breeders, they make babies. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, there's a lot right with it. Without heteronormal people, where would any of us be? And it takes something to bring children into the world or adopt and do a reasonably good job raising them, especially today. And the reason I know that is because whatever it is, I don't have it. But problems can arise when heteronormal people take on the attitude that that's the only way to be, or that that's the best way to be. I remember years ago in Houston, our church had a guest speaker who was making the point that on a broad societal level, gay people, and by implication other members of LGBTQIA+, serve an important and even necessary function. He said they're like ballast. They're like a tail on a kite. They keep things from getting out of control. And as an example, he pointed out that gay people do not make much of a contribution to world population, for obvious reasons. And as a group, they tend to be fairly peaceful. Of course, there are exceptions, but by and large, they're a fairly peaceful group. And gay people are often creative, artistic. So if you could wave a magic wand and, quote unquote, cure all the gay people and make them straight, it wouldn't be long before this world is a more populated place, a more violent place, and a less creative, a less artistic place. And I think most people here would agree that would be unfortunate. And for most of my adult life, I was sympathetic, but I didn't really feel I had a dog in that fight. But now it looks like I do, at least to a degree, because pretty much all LGBTQIA+ individuals, including me, are not heteronormal. Now, when I was younger, like most people, I was under strong social, cultural, hormonal urges to hook up and seek out romantic relationships. Toward the end, that I would do what Mother Nature intended, procreate and see to it that my children could do the same. Years ago, I was attending an open AA meeting, and one of the guys there was telling his story, and he was saying that when he was a younger man, he could do two things well. He said he could fornicate, not the exact word he used, but you get the idea, and he could fight. And while his version was rather crudely put and contributes to any number of social ills, when you think about it, we need guys like that. You know, we need guys who can procreate and defend themselves. It pretty much assures the survival of the species. And it can often be a dirty, messy business, but it works. But I always had a feeling I wasn't destined to be much of a player in that game. Wasn't quite sure why. I wanted to be. You know, felt I should be. But in my pursuit of heteronormalcy, there were times I felt I was in way over my head. Kind of like I was behind the controls of a 747 and I don't even know how to fly a Cessna. And I knew what love and romance looked like. You know, I've seen the movies, TV shows, read a few books. I guess you could say I was familiar with the form, but not the substance. And I knew I wasn't gay. That was never a question. I mean, I dated. I've had a number of girlfriends over the years. And some relationships were healthier than others, but nothing that even came close to a marriage or even a committed loving relationship. And if I occasionally ask myself, what's up with that? You know, why am I this way? And the answer, I think, has to do with the usual suspects, heredity and environment. Fundamentally, it's part of who I am. For example, I know a lot of folks recharge and re-energize by being around other people, and other folks recharge by spending time alone. And that's me. And I've always had an admiration for what I would describe as noble loners. So people like Sidney Poitier in Lilies of the Field, Kirk Douglas in Lonely Are the Brave. In the late 60s, there was a TV show called Then Came Bronson, those of you of a certain age may recall, featuring Michael Parks as this kind of cool biker who traveled the Southwest and he would touch people's lives in a positive way and then ride off into the sunset. And I remember thinking, yeah, man, that's the way to be. That's the way I want to be. But there were environmental influences as well. I can tell you that marriage, as it was modeled for me by my parents, did not impress me as something I wanted for myself. More than once, I remember thinking, if that's what it means to be married, I don't want to do that. You know, that's what it means to raise kids. I don't want to do that. Mom and Dad had what I would describe as a George and Martha type relationship. And when I say George and Martha, I'm talking about George and Martha from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. They were both very intelligent, educated, articulate, quite capable of using words as weapons, often did so. And I don't want to totally paint him with that brush because that wouldn't be fair or accurate, but there were some similarities that I think had an effect. So for a lot of years, my attempts to be a player in the heterosexual or the heteronormal world were met with varying degrees of defeat, failure. And lately I've come to ask myself, okay, so what does a healthy version of sexual romantic minimalism look like? And I'm not sure I know exactly. I imagine it'll be different for different people. For me, it includes understanding that I do have a need for some feminine energy in my life, and I'm not sure what that looks like exactly, but I occasionally get a clue. Once or twice a year, I'll have a dream in which I'm with a woman, and it's not sexual, it's not even especially romantic, but there's a certain boy-girl energy at work there that has kind of a sweetness and an innocence to it that I think speaks to my unmet need for a certain amount of physical and emotional intimacy. And I'm occasionally asked if I'm married or if I have any kids. And that can get a little uncomfortable because unmarried men over a certain age often are viewed with a certain degree of suspicion. The unspoken question being, okay, so what's this guy doing with his sexual energy? Is he gay? Is he a player? Is he a pedophile? Or maybe he doesn't have any sexual energy. That's kind of weird too. You know, whatever it is, it's a mystery. And people tend to not like sexual mysteries, especially if the person in question is spending time with children, as a teacher or a coach or a relative or maybe a friend of the family. And I'm not completely insensitive. You know, I can understand that. If I were a parent, I'd kind of like to know what's going on there. And the wretched truth is that once in a while there is inappropriate behavior and sexual abuse. But I think there's a perception on the part of some heteronormal people that homosexuals and other members of LGBTQIA+ community are by definition oversexed, always on the hunt. But that has not been my experience or observation, and it stands to reason that heterosexuals are not the only ones who experience romantic minimalism. And there are, I would say, advantages to the minimalist lifestyle. You don't have to worry much about STDs or unwanted pregnancies or 2 a.m. feedings or messy divorces. Now, of course, there are plenty of joys and rewards that go along with parenting as far as being heteronormal is concerned. So maybe in my next life, I get to do that or have to do it, whichever applies. And for me, learning about sexual romantic minimalism has given shape and definition and legitimacy to something I always suspected about myself. For years, I didn't feel I had the emotional intelligence for healthy adult relationships. And I think there is some truth to that. But I can see now that I was trying to be something I wasn't, heteronormal. And I've decided that being a minimalist is not a pathology, not a condition that needs to be addressed, but rather a potentially healthy and not uncommon way to be. People, especially young people, are often told to follow their passion. And that's good advice. But when I heard that, I usually felt a pang of inadequacy because I'm not an especially passionate person. There are things I like, there are things I enjoy, things I'm good at, but I'm not passionate. And I'm increasingly okay with that. It occurs to me that great actors and other performers are often that way because they have easy access to their feelings, which are strong and close to the surface. But I think that also tends to explain why they often have rather chaotic personal lives. Same reason, strong feelings, strong emotions that are close to the surface. So it takes all kinds. And one of the reasons I'm sharing this with you today is that just maybe there are a few of you out there who, like me, have been going through life feeling a little bit different on the outside looking in. In 12-step groups, they often talk about the importance of awareness, acceptance, and action. Well, I'm increasingly aware of who and what I am, and I believe I've accepted it. And sharing this with you today is an important action, an act of trust. Sometimes I feel like for most of my life I've been in school learning stuff, and only recently have I been able to apply what I've learned in the real world. And that's okay. I've always had a feeling I was going to be better at being old than I was at being young. And in the last few months, I've been given the opportunity to renew a friendship from 38 years ago. Something I would not have predicted, but I guess it's like they say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And that reminds me of something that a member of my church in Houston said before she passed away. She said, if you're going to marry somebody, marry a friend. And I'm not sure I'll ever have a chance to apply that, but it sounds good to me. So thank you for being here, and thank you for listening.